Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Voting Rights Act Section 5 Post-Decision Edition. Thanks for tuning in. On Monday, June 22nd, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Northwest Austin Municipal Utility District No. 1 v. Holder. In this case, the Supreme Court considered whether Northwest Austin Municipal Utility District No. 1 was eligible to be bailed out from coverage under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, or, failing that, whether Section 5 should be struck down as unconstitutional. In an 8-1 decision delivered by Chief Justice Roberts, the court reversed the district court by holding that Northwest Austin is eligible to be bailed out from Section 5 coverage and remanded the case for further proceedings, thus avoiding the question of whether the 2006 extension of Section 5 was an unconstitutional exercise of Congress's remedial powers under the Reconstruction Amendments. To discuss the decision, we bring back from our post-argument podcast on this case, Sharon Brown, a principal attorney at the Pacific Legal Foundation. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Brown.
On June 22, 2009, the United States Supreme Court issued its highly anticipated decision in Northwest Austin Municipal Utility District No. 1 versus Holder. Instead of addressing whether Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 was constitutional, the court sidestepped the question for another day. The case presented two questions. First, whether Congress acted within its authority to enforce the constitutional prohibition against discrimination in voting when it reauthorized Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. And second, whether a small Austin, Texas-based utility district is statutorily eligible to terminate its coverage under Section 5. First, some background. Section 5, regarded by many as the heart of the Voting Rights Act, both blocks and deters discriminatory voting changes in a select number of jurisdictions around the country. It forbids 9 states, mostly located in the South, and portions of 7 other states from making any changes to voting practices or procedures without the permission or preclearance from the Department of Justice or file a lawsuit in federal court. Preclearance is required for big changes like redistricting, as well as small changes like moving the polling place across the street, but the cost for doing so can be prohibitive. Section 5 was set to expire after 5 years in 1970, but has been reauthorized by Congress for the third time in 2006. It is now slated to expire in 2031. The preclearance requirement of Section 5 is unique in our nation's history. 4 decades ago, when it was first adopted, the preclearance provision was indispensable. Prior to the 1960s, certain states in the Deep South implemented Jim Crow policies that successfully engaged in never-ending gamesmanship to disenfranchise blacks. In 1965, Congress had volumes of empirical evidence to justify the extraordinary requirement of preclearance, and carefully crafted a triggering formula to make Section 5 apply only to those states and jurisdictions where officials had successfully engaged in discriminatory practices that disenfranchised blacks. But that was then. The Northwest Austin case began days after the reauthorization of Section 5 by Congress, when a small Texas-based utility district composed of only 3,500 residents filed a lawsuit. The utility district believed that it should not be forced to obtain the federal government's consent merely to change the location of its polling place from a private residence to an elementary school. Although it sits within the state of Texas, a covered jurisdiction, it was created in the late 1980s and has no history of ever discriminating against black or Latino voters. The utility district also sought relief from the preclearance obligations under the bailout provision of the Voting Rights Act, a process established in Section 4. That provision allows the release of a political subdivision from the preclearance requirements if certain rigorous conditions are met, including submitting substantial evidence that the covered political subdivision has not engaged in discrimination in voting on account of race. The district court denied relief, concluding that bailout was not available to a political subdivision like the utility district because it did not register its own voters. The utility district appealed to the United States Supreme Court, arguing that the Voting Rights Act imposes no such limitation on bailout. The utility district also argued that preclearance strikes at the heart of federalism, injecting the federal government directly into the state and local legislative process. Because the law's justification is obsolete, the district claimed that the preclearance requirements are unconstitutional. But the Supreme Court punted the important constitutional question. Chief Justice Roberts put together a coalition of 8 of 9 justices. The Chief Justice began his opinion by recognizing the weighty constitutional issue that was presented to the court, yet quickly cautioned that the court would not rush to decide it. The opinion began its analysis by recalling the history that justified the initial enactment of the Voting Rights Act, starting with the enactment of the 15th Amendment in 1870. Section 2 of the 15th Amendment granted Congress a new power to use appropriate legislation to ensure that the right to vote would not be denied or abridged on account of a person's race. Yet in the nearly 100 years after the adoption of the 15th Amendment, Congress's attempt to ensure that right failed. Thus, in 1965, Congress passed the Voting Rights Act. The Chief Justice recognized the undeniable success of Section 5, pointing out that things have changed in the South, with the voter turnout and registration rates now approaching parity, and that blatant discriminatory evasions of federal decrees are rare. The court recognized that minority candidates hold offices at unprecedented levels. As was pointed out in the briefing, how could we forget that this country just elected its first African-American president? Yet with these successes, the court recognized the grave federalism concerns raised despite our historic tradition that all states enjoy equal sovereignty. The Chief Justice questioned the very coverage formula used by Congress, which was based on 35-year-old data that failed to account for current political conditions. When Congress reauthorized the law in 2006, it retained the Section 5 restrictions on the same states: Virginia, Alaska, Alabama, Arizona, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, South Carolina, and Texas, along with parts of 7 others, without an examination of whether some should be removed or others added. The court noted that under either the congruence and proportional test from City of Burney versus Flores or the rational means test from Katzenbach versus South Carolina, Section 5's preclearance requirements and its coverage formula raises serious constitutional questions. But according to the Chief Justice, the constitutional question would not be answered because this case could easily be resolved on a narrow technical matter by granting the utility district's request for the right to petition to bail out from Section 5's coverage. The court made it clear that all political subdivisions covered by the act were free to make the case to federal officials for an exemption. But, in my view, this is little consolation. Surely the utility district should be freed from federal preclearance, but this decision won't open up the floodgates of relief from Section 5. So far, only 17 jurisdictions of the 12,000 covered by the Act and all located in Virginia have ever been allowed to bail out of Section 5's restrictive provisions. Only Justice Clarence Thomas would have found the provision unconstitutional in a decision concurring in the judgment and dissenting in part. Justice Thomas explains that the court was not in a position to avoid adjudicating the constitutionality of Section 5, because the court's resolution of the statutory question allowing the utility district to seek bailout did not resolve the ultimate relief sought by the plaintiff. The utility district must still prove that it is entitled to bailout, an onerous process indeed. Thus, the court was required to resolve the constitutional question once and for all by holding that Section 5 can no longer be justified as an appropriate enforcement mechanism. Justice Thomas's analysis begins with a short history lesson, comparing the extreme pattern of discrimination of the past with the remarkable changes in social conditions of today. He explains that there is no longer a demonstrated connection between the strong remedial measures provided by Section 5 and scattered discrimination that may be present today. In contrast to the past, there is no jurisdiction anywhere in the country today which engages in systematic campaign to deny minorities the right to vote. Voter registration in jurisdictions covered by Section 5 generally show no disparity between white and black voters. And there is no evidence that without Section 5, government officials in covered districts would return to acts of violence, terror, and subterfuge to prevent minorities from voting. Citing to various cases, Justice Thomas concludes that Section 5 intrudes on the prerogatives of state and local governments and abridges the voting rights of all citizens. Its encroachment on state sovereignty is significant and undeniable. This encroachment is especially troubling because it destroys local control of the means of self-government, one of the central values of our polity. As Justice Thomas correctly concluded, the extreme measures of the past can no longer justify this intrusive and burdensome remedy. To Justice Thomas, the acknowledgement of Section 5's unconstitutionality does not mean a return to voter disenfranchisement, but represents a fulfillment of the 15th Amendment's promise of full enfranchisement and honors the success of the Voting Rights Act. But what of the future of Section 5? Because of the strong words from the majority and dissent in Northwest Austin, Section 5's future remains in doubt. Congress would be wise to heed the warnings from the court and address the numerous constitutional pitfalls present in Section 5. If Congress fails to change the problematic statute, the next lawsuit challenging Section 5 is sure to reach the merits, and Section 5 is not likely to survive. I am Sharon Brown with the Pacific Legal Foundation. I can be reached through the Federalist Society with any questions or comments. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.